Hour presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Allison Keys. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Jordan, meeting with foreign ministers in the Middle East and reaffirming U.S. support for a humanitarian ceasefire in Israel's war on Hamas.
We all agreed on the importance of using our respective influence and capabilities to deter any state or non-state actor from opening another front in this conflict or taking other destabilizing actions. All of us have a direct interest in this.
This as Palestinian civilians suffer with little food and water amid Israel's ground assault. CBS's Deborah Pata.
It's been exactly 4 weeks since the brutal Hamas attack, which triggered this war. Now there are growing calls for a humanitarian pause in Gaza, but they appear to be falling on deaf ears. Just this morning, several more strikes in Gaza hitting a hospital entrance, a water tank supplying communities in the south, and a school used to house thousands of people whose homes have been flattened.
Now to Ukraine. Where President Zelensky is saying the war in the Middle East is taking focus away from Ukraine, but he says his nation has been through rough times before. This is a European Commission president recommends an additional $53 billion in aid for Ukraine until 2027. Back in the U.S., a former suburban Kansas City daycare worker is headed to prison for abusing children. CBS's Jennifer Kuiper explains.
Rachel Beth Schrader has been sentenced to 10 years in prison after pleading guilty to 4 counts of child abuse. She was reported to police by coworkers at a Westwood, Kansas daycare center in 2021 after they noticed an infant was injured. According to the affidavit, Schrader said she lost her patience that day and it was the only time. However, investigators who watched surveillance video were able to document her abusing or seriously neglecting children more than 170 times in less than a month. In one case, kicking a child in the chest, causing him to fall backward and hit his head. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
The threat from COVID-19 is far from over. CBS's Naomi Rockham.
There's a new dominant COVID-19 subvariant in the U.S. The CDC says HV1, part of the Omicron strain, is responsible for more than 1 in 4 cases nationwide and nearly a third of all cases in the Mid-Atlantic region. Medical experts believe the current updated COVID vaccines are effective against HV1.
Colorado Republican Representative Ken Buck says he's had enough. Buck says he won't seek re-election, saying the nation is on a collision course with reality. He has publicly attacked former President Trump's lies about winning the 2020 election. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
This is Civic Media. This is Civic Media. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
If they vote not to confirm you, that means essentially you're fired. And they just did it yesterday to 8.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The holidays will be here before you know it. People who support animal-friendly diets would like you to consider vegan meals for your big gatherings. Here's more from Mike Moan.
For holidays like Thanksgiving, turkey is still the staple. Mary Telfer with the Wisconsin-based organization Alliance for Animals says they urge everyone to avoid eating meat this holiday season due to animal treatment concerns, human health, and environmental impacts from food production. For people on the fence about making the switch, she says you can lean into vegan options.
And they think, how can I do this and still please my family? How can I do this and still keep up our traditions? I mean, yeah, try some different things.
She says you can sample vegan food before the holidays, noting there are now countless websites and cookbooks with recipes. And Telfer says if you feel like you need to serve meat to your guests, you can offset the impact by using sides like non-dairy whipped cream. And staples like mashed potatoes and cranberries can still complement the meal. And if you're worried about missing out on protein, Telfer recommends you load up on protein-rich vegetables such as peas. As for considering a vegan holiday meal, she feels it shouldn't be as controversial as some might think.
We don't think it's strange when we welcome progress, when it comes in the form of technology or the newest phone or laptop, and yet we have a harder time embracing progress in how we think about our non-human animal friends.
Beyond the treatment of animals, she says industrialized food production creates land use issues for future generations, threatens wildlife habitat while adding to pollution woes that harm human health. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 51. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, lows around 33. High of 54 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 41 degrees.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Kripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and here is today's episode. Colleen Maraca joins me in the podcast studio today. Colleen, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Eric Larson is our guest today, and he is, first of all, he's a guy from Wisconsin who grew up with a love of the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And he reached out to you originally to
Yeah, as soon as you saw the stuff on the email, you're like, let's get him in.
This guy has been to the North Pole a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And on his most recent excursion, you were kind of able to see the real effects of climate change. He did essentially an episode with Discovery Channel going to the North Pole, showing sort of in real time what's happening with the shrinking ice. But he was able to do it. And I think just the connection he gives to these places that we often do not see yet are often the most hard hit by climate change. It offers a real interesting perspective on sort of our connection with the natural world. And of course, things we can do to help with climate change and all that. Mm-hmm. And one of the big ones is just making sure you get out and enjoy what we have right here in our own backyard and in Wisconsin, or really any state. But I'll speak to Wisconsin since I know it. We have so many state parks. We have national parks. We have the Ice Age Trail, the Apostle Islands. There's so many local ways to just get out and enjoy what we have here. Mm-hmm. And I think by that enjoyment, you then are inspired to keep it and keep it for future generations.
The cool part about the interview that I liked, though, was him talking about his encounters with polar bears.
Yeah.
Like, bears just, yeah. It's like, what is it? Brown, get down, black, attack, and white, good night, because you're going to die if you run into a polar bear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. They are one of the bears that hunt you. But also the reason, you know, they're even, like, creating more human encounters is because they're losing sea ice and everything, and that's how they hunt seals. So that it's kind of like everything has its own place. But if you are in their territory, you know, then you're kind of fair game. They were stalked by them. They're moving these 100-pound sleds with them along the way. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah,
what he does.
It was cool.
But really interesting conversation. Wisconsin guy. I think you all will enjoy this quite a bit. And with that, let's get to my conversation with polar explorer Eric Larson. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Where are you at right now?
I am in Colorado. That's where I live now.
A
small mountain town around almost 9,000 feet. It's awesome. Think like Bayfield, but in the mountains.
Oh, that's nice. What's the name of the town?
Called Crested Butte.
Crested Butte. Bayfield. So the kind of that Bayfield vibe, or are you saying like population of Bayfield?
A lot of sailboats. Just kidding.
I was just going to say, is what the going on up there?
Same vibe. Kind of like quirky, place, people real focused on outdoor stuff. It's the same, you know, like our town is like around 2,000 people. So like the whole school is just one building, K through 12, and just surrounded by wilderness, basically. So it's awesome.
It's great. I gotta say, man, you are you're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. You know, I don't know how to say it in another way, but I mean it in the best way. like watching, you know, watching you and your teammate on that excursion to the North Pole was mind blowing. The fact, yeah, I mean, you know, to give the audience sort of just a general sense of it, you guys are carrying 300 pounds, 300 plus, 380 some odd pounds. You're pulling that sled up these chunks of ice. And, you know, on your first couple days in, you've only gone like, I don't know, 6 miles or something of hundreds of miles. And you got a tight deadline for a plane to come pick you up, or you're just stranded in the ocean forever. You know, no. I mean, it's really, I think, inspiring to see how far you push, I think, the human limits of, you know, what's possible inside yourself. And at the same time, showcasing how our planet is changing. So I very much so like applaud you for that. But, you know, I think let's kind of start at the beginning. Like, where did you grow up and what inspired you to go to the North Pole, to go to Everest, to go to all these crazy places? What inspired it?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm a huge fan. I've gone down the rabbit hole on your stuff quite a bit. And so I appreciate the opportunity. And it's fun to be able to have these types of conversations.
You are from Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah. I'm a proud Wisconsinite. I grew up just north of Milwaukee, Cedarburg. Oh, yeah. A pretty normal childhood. I love my hometown. I love going back.
It's gorgeous, man. Cedarburg, really. They got that river running through it. The nice downtown, man. It's like a low-key, very idyllic place to exist.
It's like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, basically. And, you know, our big line as kids was, and I don't know if this is still the case, but it was like the second biggest tourist attraction in Wisconsin, which is was our claim to fame that we wore pretty proudly on our... on our shirts. So
what's the first biggest tourist attraction in Wisconsin?
I mean, it must be Wisconsin Dells, I think.
You can't beat Wisconsin Dells.
No, it's, you can try, but you're still just the second biggest.
Yeah. Which, yeah.
I don't know what the numbers on it. It speaks both highly and poorly of Wisconsin Dells, because I don't know what the numbers are on Wisconsin Dells to beat out Cedarburg. Is it a lot, or it doesn't seem like it would take much? You know what I mean?
You know,
it's like two more
Cedarburg's
people.
Really nice, man. You know, and they got the House on the Rock kind of in that area. I mean, you know, Rick Wilcox's Magic Castle, the Trojan Horse go-karts. I mean, it's no small feat to beat out Wisconsin Dells in this situation.
Yeah, well, we can always hope. I don't know. Maybe I'll get some of my friends to go visit and we'll just get the tally up to number one. Maybe that's a thing.
There you go. So you grew up in Cedarburg.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, I was a pretty average, probably about as average as you could get, like, just was like the slowest kid on my soccer team, and not terrible student, but pretty average. Like, no one would have looked at me and been like, oh yeah, that kid's going places, you know. They would have been like, oh, Eric, and then moved on to the next thing. So, but I think for me, I was always interested in being outside, and I was trying to figure out the world around me, and I was curious, and I loved camping. And So I was just trying to get out and do things, and back then, you know, there wasn't this big network of people. There wasn't a way to connect in any sort of real way. And so I just started doing things, and I got interested in biking, and I got a paper out and saved up a bunch of money and bought a bicycle. And then I was gone. And that was like, I mean, I was 12 years old and I was with a map and just riding my bike for, you know, 60, 70, 100 miles over the weekend. And, you know, I would go into bars and Packers game would be on and I would get a Coke, and then I would be in all my spandex, you know, and and that was in the 80s. And so people did not look well at that, you know, going to some of these just kind of random rural bars and, you know, a 12, 13 year old kid riding a road bike, you know, like Lance Armstrong wasn't a thing. And, but I loved it because I was on my own. I was out kind of just discovering the world around me. And I just started doing more of those things. Like I would just kind of always wrangle my friends into doing things. Like I'm like, let's canoe our river that runs through our town, Cedar Creek. But I'm like, I would get my mom to drive me up farther. And then we would I want to do more of it. So we would just like portage the canoe down Main Street, Cedarburg, so that we could keep going. And so I just was doing a lot of those things and was always really interested in being outside and just kind of discovering the world around me and in whatever way I could.
That's really cool. Biking was kind of the way I first got into outdoors as well. I was a bike mechanic
in
high school.
So yeah. Was I.
Oh, where at?
Well, in Grafton, and I loved that job. It was Grafton Ski and Cyclery at the time. I worked there from the time I was 16 to my mid 20s, and I was a bike racer too eventually. But that job I credit with a lot of just problem solving skills.
Yeah.
And you know, everything. I mean, I spent a lot of time fixing bikes, but I did sales as well, but just, you know, getting these old jalopies in there and trying to figure out what was going on, and 3-speed hubs and blah, blah, blah. And there was no YouTube to look at. And
no. So
it was, you know, it was just figuring things out. But and that job also allowed me, I love bikes. I call myself the world's most boring person, because when I was a kid, I loved camping and bikes. And, you know, however many years later, I still love camping and bikes. Yeah. But where'd you work?
I was over at a few places. I did Wheel and Sprocket, and I did Willie Bikes in Madison.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't, I'm going to say, the best mechanic in the world by any stretch. Arguably not great at all, but you know, I did my time there. No, I was okay. You know what I really like about just being a bike mechanic is, like, especially at an early age, it just gives you a general understanding of mechanics. Even if you don't have that kind of a mind, you just have a little bit more that becomes intuitive. So this is the best part about being a bike mechanic, is you can start to Frankenstein your own bike, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I remember, I don't know what my dad was thinking, but thankfully he just didn't say much of anything, but I took his bike, and this was like, I started working in the late 80s. And so that, like, I have pictures of our bike shop, and it was all pink and yellow and, you know, fluorescent colors back then. And we had this like cable housing that was fluorescent pink. And so I took my dad's bike and I, you know, put fluorescent pink cable housing and all the brakes and derailleurs, and then I wrapped his bars in like fluorescent yellow, and he was just like, okay. But it worked well, you know.
Yeah, that's a very bike mechanic thing to do, just totally. Like, make it look like unnecessarily weird, you know.
Oh yeah,
semi-flashy. Well,
and back then we had, there was no real, like, the cool factor was just tacky, straight up tacky. Yeah. So we didn't really have any sort of elegance or style. It was just like, oh, here's these like fluorescent colors and let's put on our Oakley razor blades. And, you know, I mean, they made seat covers for a while that were just like these nylon things that were like leopard, like pink leopard skin seat covers.
Oh, I've seen those with the little, with the zip up. You cinch them in the back.
Yeah. And then it just ended, you know. It was like that the only way to quit that stuff is like cold turkey. You know, you can't go to rehab for that. You can't, right. You know, you just gotta like, and then it was done. And then we were in like forest green and maroon, you know.
Kurt Cobain was like the cold turkey of it all, you know. The grunge scene came around and then people were done with it.
Yeah.
Well, so you're a bike mechanic and you're in Wisconsin and you're doing your thing. You're exploring on the weekends, biking around. And do you just slowly get more and more aggressive with your explorations?
Yeah. I mean, it's a slow burn. You know, unfortunately, I don't have the exciting, like, I opened up a book or like someone stopped me on the street or whatever story. I got involved in a couple of groups that were doing trips. My family did a lot of camping as well. And then by the time I was in, high school, I started planning my own trips with friends. And so we did a trip down the Namekagon and St. Croix River. And then we started going up to the Boundary Waters. And, you know, at first it was like a week and then it was a couple weeks, you know, and it was just amazing. I kind of think back on those times. I was just so green. I didn't know anything. We would get lost, turned around, you know, like whatever, get caught in storms, have accidents. And I loved every minute of it. I loved it. And I was also, I think another big Wisconsin thing, which I've heard you kind of mention, which I think is part of where this all comes from, is this idea of up north. You know, like everybody always talks about going up north. And so I was always really interested in going farther north and just kind of that transition into more wilderness. I always loved it. And going up to northern Wisconsin and just being in more wild areas. And as a result, I was obsessed with Alaska too. And which was, you know, the kind of the last frontier of wilderness. And I also read a lot of books. I read a lot of expedition books, exploration, adventure books. So I had all these things in my mind. But when I graduated college, I got a job in Alaska as a backcountry ranger. And then my world just opened up because I was like, oh, this is what a mountain is. You know, I had never really seen a mountain before. I hadn't been out of the Midwest. You know, I had been nowhere. And then I was just like, man, this is amazing. And I, you know, was howled at wolves and had close encounters with grizzly bears and glaciers. And I was just like, man, how can I get more of this stuff? And I realized there that if you were willing to accept, you know, uncertainty, like if you didn't have a straight path and you weren't necessarily worried about making money, there are a lot of opportunities that exist out there, and all you got to be willing to do is take them. And so that was kind of the path that I was on after that. And you know, it wasn't like just going up. There was a lot of setbacks. You know, I was making no money so much of the time. And, you know, back then there was no such thing as a tiny home. I was living in a shack and, you know, it wasn't a status symbol, or living out of your car wasn't like van life. It was just like, you suck, you know? And, so it was challenging, but that was kind of the trajectory. And I eventually got into, I wanted to be somewhere where there was more winter. And so I moved to Grand Marais, Minnesota. A neighbor from my hometown was building a cabin. So I went up just as a odd job and doing some carpentry work. And I just happened to stumble into this job at this resort as a dog musher. And, you know, then I was like, man, all the things kind of clicked together. I was like, I'd never even seen a sled dog.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
So you were in Alaska at this point, and you went to Minnesota for more winter. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny because I came back. Well, it was, you know, it's hard because you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I had gone up to Alaska and that was my kind of first big experience, you know, out on my own after college. And I had planned on staying up there, but I wanted to come back and see some friends and, you know, do all the things that I thought I was missing. And I ended up getting stuck in Wisconsin with no car and whatever. So I didn't get back to Alaska. And so, you know, there's always a little kind of roadblocks in the way. And eventually I would end up in northern Minnesota. Yeah. So I don't have too many regrets because all the bad things get you to the good places as well. But I always think, man, I could have ended up in Alaska, and I've been back many times and whatnot, but it's every time I go, I'm like, oh man, this place is awesome.
Yeah. I love how, you know, you're always kind of have been, you were always obsessed with up north, and you got to the most up north place you could get to on Earth.
Yes, that's true.
The North Pole.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for let's dive into that. So this was a Discovery that put out this that you shot this for? Yeah, it was
well, so I've done a bunch of North Pole expeditions. I did one in 2006, which was the first ever summer North Pole expedition. I did another one in 2010 as well, but the North Pole for me has always been just this unique environment that's so unlike any other place on the planet. It's just, you're traveling across an ocean that's covered with a thin layer of ice. It's brutally difficult. And so a big part of my mission is kind of telling stories of places and connecting to people to these places that are so, you know, distant and kind of out of mind of people. And so I really wanted to film and share the story of an expedition to the North Pole. And that was kind of the trajectory that I was working on. And I just got lucky. I got a call from Animal Planet at the time, which is a Discovery Network. And they're like, hey, what are you doing that would make a good movie? And I'm like, have I got the story for you, you know? And so they're like, well, here's like a very tiny chunk of change. Go film it. And if you come out alive, we'll see if we can make a movie out of it. And so they didn't want to take the risk of any sort of bigger commitment, because they're like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, well, that's the beauty of it. You know, that's what a real adventure is. There's an uncertain outcome. We had kind of set some big goals and also we're filming it. And for me, that was really the most important, was to be able to tell a story of that place through our journey, which is kind of that personal connection, to really help people better understand what it was like. So, and it turned out well. I mean, I think the narration is a little over the top, but, I think the story, it's not fake reality, you know, like we weren't up there staging anything. We were filming it all ourselves. It's a challenging environment just sitting there, let alone trying to do all that other junk. And so, yeah, I'm proud of that. And it was many years ago now, but it's still something that I look at as one of my biggest accomplishments, I would say, or bigger accomplishments for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there were a few things that stuck out to me as just, wow, this is an incredible landscape. And you guys are mind-blowing, the risk that you take. You know, you're standing on that rubbery ice, you know. Yes. and this is ice that connects two different ice chunks of the North Pole, and you know, you're basically, if the ice cracks, then the salt deteriorates the ice, you know, but you're basically on these skis on this rubbery thing, and then you actually swim, you get in the water in a dry suit and you swim, I don't know, 100 yards to the next thing, and you get out and you pull your other buddy over. I mean, polar bears, you know, like you had polar bears tracking you a few times in the thing. I mean, these are some really intense environmental, I don't know. It's so wild, because I've done a little bit. of sort of the backpacking and all that. I did the Appalachian Trail. I did the Bighorn Mountains. And even just being maybe 10, 20 miles out in the wilderness, when you're climbing up, we were climbing up a waterfall. I was climbing up with my buddy. I was like, man, one slipped rock.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
Maybe, you know, a helicopter could come probably. Where you are, no. I mean, if you get hypothermia, you're dead within, you know, an hour or something. I don't know. It's just insane the kind of risk that you guys were taking. Do you just get to that gradually over time, or do you have something that's always been inside you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, first of all, risk, I think, is relative to your knowledge, experience, and preparation. So
you're saying I'm an idiot. Is what you're saying, which I appreciate. I am. You figured that out.
I don't necessarily like to call people out right away without knowing that well, but if that's what it comes to, yeah,
it is.
No, you're not an idiot. You're just inexperienced. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's also true. That's also very true.
I mean, where, you know, there's the classic line. It's like, where does good judgment come from? And it's bad judgment, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a level of risk in being in those situations and being so far removed from any sort of, you know, rescue. That being said, it's calculated, and it's also, you know, a function of our experience, our training, you know, our ability to deal with uncertainty and kind of unknowns as they come up. And I do feel you get better at that, both physically from like, oh, I can do this and fix this, to philosophically, which is just kind of like taking a mental hand and pushing down all that fear and anxiety to be able to go. And so, you know, my first North Pole expedition, I was skiing on the ice and I was just crying the whole time because I was so scared. And slowly you just start getting better at it. And, you know, and it's not like I just went to that North Pole for the first time. I mean, I was doing all sorts of camping trips. I was going to the Boundary Waters. I was backpacking. I was riding my bike. I mean, all this stuff. And so it's this process of getting there. And that, and I would say the risk for my types of expeditions are, you know, a little less than, you know, say someone on the side of the mountain with no rope. You know, they sneeze and they fall 1,000 feet. I fall like, you know, a couple feet, and then I brush the snow off the ground and keep going on. But
right,
it's an interesting process overall, for sure.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Negotiations in Jordan as Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets with Middle Eastern officials over Israel's war on Hamas.
We come together here today sharing the same fundamental interest and objective to end this conflict in a way that ensures lasting peace and security in the region.
Civilians in Palestinian territories are dealing with shortages of food and water and fighting. CBS's Robert Berger.
Israeli ground forces have surrounded Gaza City, and they're moving methodically through bombed out neighborhoods. It's an extremely dangerous mission, with reports of house to house fighting.
You get an extra hour of sleep overnight or an extra hour to party. Daylight saving time kicks in at 2 a.m. Eastern in most states in the nation. That means it gets light much earlier, but also means it will be dark when most folk get off work. Experts say the time change can cause sleep deprivation. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Badgers at Indiana. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers face off against the Indiana Hoosiers at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. Indiana made a change last month, hiring Rod Carey as their new offensive coordinator. The 52-year-old was born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin. How's their offense improved? Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
You know, I think this is a team that's creating and generating some momentum. I think they're playing better. You know, I think they're into a rhythm a little bit more offensively than...
Well,
Welcome to Carroll University Football on the Shaw, WAUK, 540 AM and 101.1 FM. The Pioneers own back-to-back winning seasons and are on the way to make it three in a row.
And today is the final home game of the season for Carroll football. The Pioneers are also celebrating Senior Day while welcoming the Big Blue of Millikan University to the Schneid. This one's set to be a great matchup. Carroll University football is brought to you locally by Mia's in downtown Waukesha.
And by the Shaw, WAUK, and Civic Media. Now, let's join Don Brown and Johnny Watermullen on the field for all the action.
Let's go Pios!
Calvin? Calvin, are we starting?
We are live.
Hello.
Calvin?
Welcome to Waukesha, Wisconsin, home of Wisconsin's oldest university, Carroll University, where we're going to watch our beloved Pios. Nope, Calvin, I did not hear the song. My apologies for the technical difficulties. But, hey, I'm your host, Don Brown. I am joined by Greg Triple G Juan Snyder, and this is the last home game for our beloved Pios, who take on 0-8 Millikan in what we'd call a must-win situation so that the Pios can secure a third winning season. Of course, they'll have to win their final game next week at Washington University. But, after a heartbreaking last-minute loss to Carthage last week, this game's even more important for our Pios, especially here on Senior Day. And we're in the middle of a ceremony for the seniors and their families. Mike Shulis, athletic director, was kind enough to send me the complete list of players and parents, as well as quotes from each of the players, which we'll be reading throughout the game. I guess we can go ahead with the players we have remaining, if that's all 20. No, there's a few left. In fact, the guy they're mentioning next is number 9, Josh Raby, the senior quarterback, a criminal justice major from Algonquin. He's accompanied by Dan and Lisa Raby, and he says, thank you, Carroll. Go Pios. And so, hey, we'll continue to do this, and then Greg and I will continue with the pregame. But this really is a nice celebration, a great way to honor the seniors and their families for their support. Have pretty much a full house here on the Carroll side.
Yeah.
Some travelers here from Millikan.
It's a great day at Schneider Stadium, Don. Temperatures, I would say.
A beautiful day for football. Nice and sunny.
I'd say in the low 50s. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Yep. But, nice and sunny. Sure. So.
The next player, the next senior is number 65, Parker Raddatz, a nursing and health care administration major from Inasha. He's accompanied by Tim Carlin and Brennan Raddatz. And Parker says, I would like to thank my family and all those close to me for the support over the past 4 years, as well as everyone on the coaching staff and team for support to accomplish my goals on and off the field. And then next is number 37, Wyatt Skipper, a healthcare administration doctorate of PT major from Chicago. He's accompanied by Neil and Cynthia Skipper. Wyatt says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, Philippians 4:13. Thank you to my parents and teammates for motivating me and being there for me throughout my football journey. So, very nice words there.
A lot of these guys thanking their teammates, you know, that shows you what a close-knit team this is.
And then the last is number 98, the punter Noah Streveler, a computer science major from Stevens Point, accompanied by Kevin and Vicky Streveler. And Noah says, thank you to my parents for always supporting me and pushing me to be my best. And thank you to my coaches and teammates for all the great memories throughout the years. So,
Noah Streveler, of course, our pioneer punter.
He's the one, yeah. And then big round of applause, yep.
Yeah.
So, and we also missed some other seniors. Trevor Pye, a sports administration major from Waterford, accompanied by Chris, Michelle, and Tom. Number 59, Zach Pleister, a biology and pre-med major from Watertown. Number 28, Jake Netchen, a sports administration major from Glendale Heights, Illinois. Number 8, J.R. Muth, a nursing major from Greendale. Number 5, A.J. Moorer, a sports admin major from Wauwatosa. Number 2, Keon Miller. a sports admin major from Wauwatosa. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. And then, I'm mixing these guys up here. AJ Moore is a sports administration major from TOSA. Kia Miller is a sports administration major from Richland Center. Number two, Kia Miller. Number seven, Tyler McLean is an adaptive PE and health education major from Potosi. Number 50, Elios Martinez is a business admin and healthcare admin major from Carpentersville, Illinois. Number 97, Nick Montes, a finance and business analytics major from Northbrook, Illinois. Number 54, Stephen Lazarus, a phys ed and health major from Colgate. Number one, Jake Laurent, the sociology major from Kenosha. And number 77, Nate Johnson, bachelor's of science from Menasha. Number 89, Josh Hill, an applied physics and mechanical engineering major from Algonquin, Illinois. Number 84, Austin Eichstedt, an actuarial science and finance major from Cudahy. Number 88, Dylan Danforth, a business admin major from Clintonville. And number 18, the first one mentioned, Luke Chavez, a business admin major from Houston, Texas. So those are our seniors. We hope that all those guys will get some playing time today. And I know we said this last week looking at the numbers, but by these numbers, which are even more in Carroll's favor, we'd say they've got a pretty good chance of winning. Milliken is still looking to win their first game.
Yep.
And they average 7.9 points per game on average on offense. They give up more than 29 points per game. Let's see. Their average points given up allowed per game is 49.8. So for our Pioneers, you know, after winning the first three games to start the season, they've lost four of their last five to even the record at 4-4. They still boast one of the nation's top offenses, as the Pioneers are averaging 37.5 points per game, which ranks 38th in all of Division
III. That's phenomenal, Don.
And their defense is allowing 30.8 points per game. So, and I think a lot of that is skewed because of some high-rolling offenses that they faced with Wheaton and North Central that's brought that number up on the defense. You take those two games away, and those points allowed are so much lower. So I really feel it's a great balanced attack on both sides of the ball that Carroll has provided. And, you know, a couple heartbreaking games. We mentioned Carthage, and in week four it was Augustana. They lost by 4 points there and had a chance to win there at the end. And in each of those games, it was just a few plays that were the difference. Mental mistakes, maybe even questionable calls by the officials. And so this is a very competitive team, part of a winning culture that Coach Buddha's introduced here. And one thing you guarantee is these guys play to the last whistle. And they want to continue growing the program and keep moving the needle. And so this game, you know, even though it's near the end of the season, it's still of great importance because I know it's important for the Pios to have a winning season. So, Greg, what are your thoughts? What have you heard around campus here in your work here?
Well, you know, it's really obviously with the seniors, we're going to be missing some defensive.
Sure. And offense, the whole receiving core pretty much.
Yeah, the whole receiving core.
So
next year. So next year's going to be, you know, maybe a rebuild, but Coach can handle that well.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Coach Buddha and his program. But as far as this game, as long as we come out of this with a W and with not a whole lot of injuries, Carroll has managed to not manage to have to deal with the injury bug this year
too much.
So I think we'll be in good hands, you know?
Yeah, yep. So they're announcing the starting lineup for the Pio offense, and we'll do the same. We've got Nate Johnson, your starting left tackle, the 6'5 sophomore from Menasha, 280 pounds. Joey Cole, number 75, is the left guard, the 6'2, 260-pound junior from Manteno, Illinois. Max Katsanos is your starting center, number 78, a 6'1 sophomore, 280 pounds from Cary, Illinois. Right guard Trevor Pye, 6'1, 295-pound junior from Waterford. And the right tackle Kevin Whitman, the 6'2 junior, 290-pound junior from Chicago. So good news is we'll have all of our O-linemen back next year, as well as many of their backups. Tight ends is number 45, sophomore, 6'1", 250-pound sophomore, Reed Breckheimer from Hilbert. And your wide receivers, Austin Eichs at number 84, the 6'4", 215-pound senior from Cudahy. Josh Hill, number 89, the 6'1", 195-pound senior from Illinois. And then our quarterback, the Axeman, number 9, Josh Raby, the 6'7", 215-pound senior from Algonquin. And then our starting tailback today is Mikey Coleman, the 5'11", 210-pound sophomore from Bloomington, Illinois. So that's your offensive lineman lineup here for the Pios.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see those senior receivers get some catches today. I'm thinking Josh Hill, Austin Eichstead, of course, is going to be probably majorly targeted a lot. So
absolutely.
It'd be nice to see them get involved in the game. So.
They sure will. A look at the defensive starting lineup for Milliken. Your defensive end, number 44, Braxton Coleman, is 6'1", 225-pound junior from Antioch, Tennessee. Defensive tackle number 99, Keyshawn Tynan, 6'1", 235-pound junior from Belleville, Illinois. The other defensive tackle, number 5, Christopher Montgomery, the 6'2", 250-pound senior from Chicago. And then your defensive end, Kuiu Amuda, 6'3", 205-pound sophomore from Riverdale. So right away, you look at that D-line, and they're quite a bit smaller. We definitely have a size edge there comparing our O-line to the D-line at Milliken. So you may see some that good balance of running plays from Coach Buda's attack. And then our linebacking corps, number 33, Braylon Keehan, a 5'10", 184-pound sophomore from Gibson City, Illinois. He's joined by linebackers number 14, James Parody, the 5'10", 200-pound sophomore from Moeka, Illinois. And then number 13, Wasu Lowell, 5'10", 185-pound junior from Jacksonville, Florida. Your safeties, number 0, Sean Steele, 6'3", 185-pound sophomore from Downers Grove, Illinois. The other safety, number 16, C.J. Forney, the 5'10", 165-pound sophomore from Terre Haute, Indiana. And your cornerbacks, number 1, Devin Williams, 5'10", 189-pound freshman from Shreveport, Louisiana. And then number 32, the other corner, Latrell Hannon, 5'6", 155-pound freshman from Lafayette, Indiana. And so I imagine it's a speedy lineup, but not a very sizable one. And so it, again, could be a lot of opportunities for the Pios to exploit on the ground and, of course, in the air with the different weapons that they have. And, one thing, because I'm really impressed with the tight end crew we have, not just with Reed Breckheimer, but Trevor Hancock, and you see a lot of double tight end formations, is I'd love to see us get these guys the ball. There was a controversial penalty in which a long pass that Trevor Breckheimer took for maybe a good 30 yards, put us right in first and goal, was called back on an offensive interference call against Josh Hill. And Johnny was doing the game with me. We're still scratching our heads over where that call came from.
If you've been searching for authentic, made-from-scratch American-Italian cuisine, visit Mia's of Waukesha. Mia's skilled chefs craft every dish with freshness and love, bringing you the true essence and flavor of American-Italian classics. Open daily Wednesday through Sunday at 800 Clinton Street in Waukesha. Walk in or call to reserve a table. 262-547-6503. That's 262-547-6503. Or log on miasofwaukesha.com.
Hey, welcome back to Schneider Stadium. Don Brown with Triple G, Greg Wansnyder, and our apologies for some of the technical difficulties we were having. I think we might have got cut off mid-conversation, but great job to Calvin there back at the studio.
Yes,
great at 217 Wisconsin Avenue for fixing these things. And Calvin, if you can hear me, chime in. If not, send me a text. But Hey, you know, we are approaching that time where it's almost kickoff. And let's take a quick – actually, we haven't had our haven't had our national anthem yet. But, Calvin, if you don't mind, let's do a quick station identification here on the Pioneer Football Radio Network. Please, Calvin, take it away.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Okay, welcome back to Schneider Stadium. Welcome back to Schneider Stadium. Don Brown with Greg Wanschneider here on the Carroll University Pioneer Football Radio Network. And before we cut off some technical difficulties, Greg and I, we were talking about the size advantage that Carroll's O-line has over Milliken's D-line and their linebacking crew, for that matter. Like, there's a significant size advantage. We mentioned Carroll's defense allowing an average 49.8 points per game, and their offense is only putting a 7.9 yards. And so when you look at Carroll's numbers, 37.5 offensively against 30.8 defensively, and again, that number skewed by the losses to North Central and to Wheaton, both which were over the 60s. So, but couldn't ask for beautiful weather today. Sunny, 51 degrees. Go ahead, Greg.
And Don, I was going to say, not to count Milliken out either of this game.
No, they're a CCIW team.
They've had some really close games. Obviously, they got pretty well demolished last week in
Wheaton.
As they played Wheaton.
Number 12 now, Wheaton, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize Wheaton had ranked up. So.
Yeah, it's listed here on the program. I just discovered that just moments ago, Greg. And so, but you figure too, if you are Milliken head coach Carlton Hill in his second season, the Commodore from Vanderbilt, you're telling your players, hey, these guys, they lost to Carthage last week, and Carthage only had one win going into that game. And so there were, I'm sure they studied that film. They took notice of some of the mental mistakes that the Pios made. And we were missing some key personnel for different reasons, injuries and whatnot. And the Pios have now come onto the field, so you may hear the roar of the crowd here. And Pios are dressed in all dark pants and jersey, or they're calling it a dark gray. Orange numbers, the white Carroll fonts over the numbers, the orange stripes over the shoulder. White trim on the numbers, and then on the pants, it says Pioneers in a vertical treatment, and then, of course, on the orange helmets, our beloved Pio Pete logo icon. The big blue Milliken, all white uniforms, no stripes, blue numbers, a royal blue, that is, and a royal blue helmet with, for any Gilthorpe fans, the Milford M logo logotype on their helmets represents Milliken, so... We're going to take a moment now for the national anthem. So, Calvin, if you would please, let's go to some very important 1 minute messages, and we'll get back to, or you can come back to us then. Thank you, Calvin. Pioneer Football Radio Network.
If you've been searching for authentic, made-from-scratch American Italian cuisine, visit Mia's of Waukesha. Mia's skilled chefs craft every dish with freshness and love, bringing you the true essence and flavor of American Italian classics. Open daily Wednesday through Sunday at 800 Clinton Street in Waukesha. Walk in or call to reserve a table. 262-547-6503. That's 262-547-6503. Or log on miasofwaukesha.com.
Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
We begun with the national anthem performed by the Carroll University Marching Band under the direction, Don, Patrick Coughlin in his... Yeah. I believe this is his fourth year.
Fourth year's band director, huh? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to welcome County Supervisor Terry Thieme, my predecessor in the city council, who sent me a very nice text. Thank you, Terry, for the very kind. He says I'm sounding good. So Terry's listening. I, Terry, cup of coffee or maybe an adult beverage next time I see him. But really glad to have Terry listening in. Is he still working with Carroll? I knew he was driving the bus for a while.
He's actually driving security. Shuttle
awesome.
Today. I had him on my way up here from, and I said, hey, listen to Don Brown and I on the game broadcast. So
we got to have Terry back on my show this week in Waukesha one of these days. And thinking of Terry and so many veterans as we approach Veterans Day. So captains are coming out in the field. For Carroll, it's Nick Montes, Elios Martinez, Josh Raby, and Josh Hill. And they are met by Sean Steele, number 0, a D-back. Number 7, Aiden Lombardo, the quarterback. Defensive lineman Christopher Montgomery, number 5. And we're trying to get one more number here, if we can meet them. So someone calls tails. Let's see. Carroll wins the toss.
Okay.
And then Carroll's electing to receive. Let's see here. Carroll has chosen to receive. So.
Carroll will be receiving. So we'll see Coach Buda's offense and Coach Ack, the offensive coordinator. We'll see... get to talk to him, Don, every couple days.
Hey, Eddie Chalmers, number 56, the sophomore from Memphis, is the fourth captain. No relation, I'm sure, to Alice Chalmers and the Chalmers family that put West Alice on the map. But and we've also confirmed that Aiden Lombardo is no relation to Guy Lombardo, but he has earned the moniker now. Every day is New Year's Eve when...
Has that been confirmed, Don, officially?
Maybe he is related. I don't. You never can tell. Aiden Lombardo, great name.
So we'll see Josh Raby and the Pio offense.
The Axeman coming out on O. So, and you know, conventional wisdom dictates that you elect to take the to start the offense in the second half. But Coach Buda has always had so much confidence in this high flying offense led by Josh Raby and a great arsenal of receivers and running backs, tight ends. So a lot of confidence in the offense here. And, you know, Pioneers looking to make a statement here, you know, having lost 4 of their last 5 games. And they want to come out of the gate flying, I'm sure. Keon Miller, the senior back, to receive for Carroll. And then kicking off for the big blue of Milliken is number 19, David Ramirez, the junior from West Lafayette, Indiana. So again, the big blue and all white, blue numbers, blue cleats, and blue helmets with the Gilthorpe Milford M as their logo type on the helmet. And it's a big, big white M there. But I do like that royal blue, Greg.
Yeah.
And again, our beloved Pios in the dark gray, they're calling it. Orange numbers and stripes. Pioneers written vertically on the hats. And Pio Pete on the orange helmet. So we're getting ready to kick off here. Ramirez.
Cowbells are out.
I'm going to have to break out my car key for key plays. And here's the boot. It's a line shot. And it rolls. Miller picks it up about the 2 or 3. He's going straight to the right. Oh, he cuts through one tackle and gets all the way to the 30. There is a flag down. And I'm guessing that could be a targeting play the way Miller was hit. Unless... usually you're looking for a hold on those type of flags, but let's see what the officials have to say. A nice return from Miller considering he was having trouble fielding the ball at the 2 the way it was kicked. Beautifully kicked by Ramirez. Well, the big blue defense is marching forward, so I'm guessing the penalties against Carroll for holding. Here comes the official now. Holding on the receiving team.
You guys,
against
that's the first,
Abe Stockwell, the D lineman from Owatonna, Minnesota.
That's the first time Don Brown was ever wrong. I want to let you all
know
that.
Hey, so ball's on the right hash here at the Pioneer 20. Twins left. Mikey Coleman on Raby's left. No receivers right. Looks like a double tight end. Here's the snap. It's going to go to, actually, this could be Marcus Johnson, actually. Well covered by the Milliken defense as he only gets two or three. So I'm seeing jersey number 24, so he's not on the two deep. But Marcus Johnson is your starter. So they're calling it second and seven, so it's a 3-yard gain here. Clock running.